The book of Hebrews diagrams what faith looks like, and then in the 11th chapter, it goes through a whole bunch of illustrations of faith. There's some people who make the first cut and then sort of a secondary list, and it's the secondary list that I'm most interested in and that we're going to look at over the next coming weeks in terms of some of the characters who illustrate and live real faith. And that will lead us up to All Saints Day in our own church when we celebrate that God still is giving people to show us what faith looks like. The writer of Hebrews diagrams it this way: now faith is an assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not yet seen. Indeed, by faith our ancestors received approval. By faith we understand that the worlds were prepared by the word of God, so that what is seen was made from things that are not visible. By faith, Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, sort of what you think of as the varsity list, are mentioned and then spoken about. But these are my favorites. Listen. And what more can I say? For time would fail me to tell you of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and Rahab, who through faith conquered kingdoms and did other amazing things. Grass will wither and flowers will fade, but the word of God lives forever and ever. In Cleveland, of course, we have the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which enshrines those who come to a level of achievement in the arts by which we think of them, some of them, as people who inspire us or speak to the beauty of something translucent to us. Of course, in Cooperstown, there are those enshrined for baseball and Springfield, basketball, in our own Canton, the NFL. If some of you were to take a walk in Los Angeles, you would see the prints of hands and names of folks in the arts by whom we would say that we would wish to remember them and consider them in an age to come as people who lifted a certain amount of connection to us, or we would want to remind us of something grand or important. But I wonder, on a day like this, what if God were to have a Hall of Fame? And I wonder, what would be the criteria, and what would be the selection process, and who would make it in, of sorts? Hebrews 11 is such a list. Some of those who were so beautiful to the very love and faith that God had called them to, that they inspired heroic behavior and activity. There are heroes and heroines, protagonists and champions that are listed in the front end of this. If you were to ask most kids, so who is your hero? Most likely people in Hebrews 11 might not come up, but especially this secondary list. They are mostly not like the first, surrounded in mystery and holiness, but they're weirdos and oddballs for the most part that God touched and used. Think of it. Every person mentioned in that secondary list was notorious for being a knucklehead, an adulterer, a prostitute, a foster child, or a coward. They were ordinary saints of sorts that were, for the most part, doofuses that found something that transformed their life, where they went on to live some remarkable peace that would enshrine them in a way that it would inspire the rest of us, starting with Gideon. Gideon's country has been surrounded for 7 years by the Midianites, their enemies. One person recently said they don't like reading the Psalms because it speaks too much of enemies, and there's too many enemies in the world, and we should just be friends. But I don't know about for you. You can put different names on them beyond flesh and blood that threaten our very lives. Things like carcinoma, things like addiction, failure, chronic depression, shame, guilt, prejudgments, relationships that have become living nightmares. You have your enemies and I have mine. If we need to go into detail, why don't we simply say this morning, you pray for me, I'll pray for you. We do have enemies, do we not? Things that threaten our very lives. And in the beginning of this story, of this particular soon-to-be hero of the faith, he's found in the cellar of a wine press threshing wheat. Now, I don't know about you, but most heroes are not found in those spaces. In fact, to thresh wheat normally meant to throw wheat up in the air, have the wind take it and blow the chaff out, and then you take what's left and you make stuff out of it. That's about as much as I know about farming. But I would know this, you would not go into the basement of a wine cellar and thresh wheat because there's no wind and it doesn't work. It's recorded that Gideon went there because he was afraid of his enemies. He was terrified. Wow, I think this is the beginning of a hero, a coward, somebody who's heard enough on CNN or Fox and can't stand it anymore. Somebody who wants to pull the covers over their head in the midst of depression and say, I can't do this. Somebody who comes to church not to be challenged, but to find comfort and escape, circle the wagons and get away from the whole mess of it. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes in the greatest of our heroes, as large as they are, they cast even a larger shadow of their own creepiness. So is the beginning of Gideon. I don't know about you, but I would rather get my bread from Giant Eagle than thresh it, but if you were to thresh, it would be better to do it in the open air. Gideon is a perfectly imperfect person. It's the first quality of those listed in the second group of the Hall of Fame. Think of this now, think of it. If you want to know if you qualify, first would be this. You have to be sort of a doofus and a coward and a chicken. Somebody who doesn't have a perfect lawn, perfect children, perfect teeth, perfect body, perfect faith. When I was younger, I thought people who made it into the Hall of Fame would be people who were nice to homeless people and folks who were perfect and folks who never got mad and things like that. But God's list is sort of different. The second quality now emerges this way. An angel of God comes and he overhears the messenger. And it simply says to him, O valiant warrior. I think it's a joke. I do, unless God can see in you what is not yet seen by yourself or by the world yet. I know this principle works. I think I've mentioned this in the selection of my daughters for future son-in-laws. I mean, sometimes you don't see what's there. Know what I'm saying? When I first walked into Angie's family home, the Lillo home, they must have thought, here comes a fixer-upper. But Angie saw something different because love is not blind, it is x-ray in its vision. It sees what is not yet there. You know what I'm saying? Love sees not just a nut and an oddball, but maybe an acorn that contains on average 10,000 new oak trees, if it only could become a mature and solid oak. God doesn't see you or me today as a hopeless and wrecked and ugly sinner. He sees us through the blood-colored lens of Christ as a forgiven saint. God comes in grace. Emmanuel is what he tells his name to Gideon is. God is with you. How can this be, he wonders. Oh, Gideon, just be quiet and listen. It works this way. If you could acknowledge or overhear from an angel that you are not alone, that God did so love not only the whole world but you, that he would give his only begotten son. God sees what you shall be, what you were made to be, what you can be. Gideon will now grow in the likeness and in the power and beauty of God. From a coward into one who is honest enough to admit his flaws and shortcomings, brilliant enough to accept the encouragement of others without making him arrogant. He will become tall enough to stand above his old self. He'll be strong enough to welcome criticism, read his story. He'll be compassionate enough to understand now others who struggle because he knows what it's like. He'll be wise enough to recognize himself still as a sinner and humble enough to appreciate the beauty of the gifts of others around him. Gideon will be generous enough to be thoughtful. And when they compel upon him after his great success in life to become the first king of Israel, no, he would say, no, God is king. God did this. God picks the weak, the fear-filled, the humble. He seems to knock our crutches out from underneath us and bring us face to face with our greatest fears. And then he reminds us, as does Paul through the Corinthian writing, that God chooses what is weak to shame the strength of the world. God chooses what is low and despised, the things that are not yet, to reduce to nothing the things that are, so that one in the end might not brag about themselves, but in the power and goodness and beauty of God. The Lord turns to this coward and tells him one day he will be a great and valiant warrior. And in his eyes, the eyes of eternity, he sees him as that now. When Pastor Hannah goes before the Board of Ordained Ministry as a member of that board to help choose future clergy people, I once served on that group. Whenever anybody thought, here I am, this is what a leader looks like, you should be choosing me, and if you don't, you miss a great gift, I would think, uh-uh. But those who came before us, who hoped to lean on God, that were a little afraid of what was before them and thought maybe to be a pastor of a church would be undaunting and overwhelming and beyond what they could do, I'd think, thank God. I think we have somebody who could be used. The Lord is with you, is the message to Gideon. God will burn you and forgive you and change you into something you never dreamt. God doesn't need just smart people with straight teeth and a good education. He needs those who find that his grace is sufficient, for power is made perfect in weakness. And best of all, I love that I think in the Hall of Fame of Faith that usually people come into it by taking one more faithful step than what they knew the day before. It's really not that much more complicated than that. Gideon, now inspired, talks to a nation about raising up an army, like a pastor might go out and try to recruit people to come to church. On his first call, he gets 32,000. Wow, I think. He's got the Joel Osteen touch. But interestingly, he actually, at the first church meeting, tells them that anybody who really doesn't want to be there for God is welcome to go home. And he whittles the group down by several tens of thousands. I think, wow, what a church growth plan. To find people who aren't obligated by guilt, but people who really want to be here. That sounds like a good plan, doesn't it? That way you don't have to sit next to grumpy people and angry people. Maybe you would sit next to somebody courageous who simply wants, really wants, to have more of God in their life. Courageous is contagious. When a brave person takes a stand, the spines of others around them are stiffened. Hospitality is courageous and contagious. When you sit next to somebody who notices you, it makes you want to notice others. Mother Teresa, when asked, when she picked up her first leper and cradled that child when she died, asked later, aren't you afraid to do this? She said, only the first time. After that, it became an act of love. Oh God, I think, please bring about some courageous people who push through fear here and simply make them brave for you. Courage is not an absence of fear, it's a pushing through it. In that way, Mark Twain said that to say somebody is brave is actually an insult. It implies that they're a coward who's doing something beyond themselves. In that sense, he said, it's simply a loose misapplication of a word. Well, anyhow, this reminded me of a quote from Scout in To Kill a Mockingbird when her dad defended an innocent black man in a prejudiced white community. She said, and I quote, "I thought of my daddy, who hated guns and had never done violence or fought in a war, to be the bravest warrior I had ever seen in all my life. I think, oh God, give us these brave warriors. A Gideon who would reduce an army of 32,000 down to 300, and then through a little smoke and mirrors and horn blowing and crashing of terracotta, a scared Midianite army would run away without one hair harmed on their head. Oh God, I think, raise up another army of saints, of heroes and heroines who inspire, who will live longer than the name LeBron James or Babe Ruth or Marilyn Monroe. When those places are rotted and crumbling and underwater or a part of a cold planet, your name, who has responded to the goodness of Jesus and has done anything in his name, will live on and on and on in sort of a hall of fame of other oddballs and weirdos and knuckleheads who found they could be loved and used by God. This place right here is filled with people who will live longer than those in Cooperstown. And when plaques and busts in Canton are crumbling, those of you who visit shut-ins for the love of Christ, who mentor children of need in our schools, who teach in our Logos or Sunday school eternal things of value, those of you who have struggled with the loss of parents or spouses and take one more faithful step to Christ, have so inspired many of us to take our steps. It's many of you who've shown me how to die and how to live and how to be a person of faith. Sometimes I'll walk into a hospice setting so frightened, not knowing what to do or say, and I witness something translucent and powerful where God says, "Dave, you can't be that big a chicken anymore, because now you've seen." I believe with all my heart, some of you single moms who show up every Sunday to bless your children and grow in your faith, have your names written in an eternal way. Oh God, I think, oh God, bring us to a place where we can see what real value is and how our names might sparkle and shine in a way that matter, not so much here and now, but later and then. I'll close with this. I'm way ahead of time. I should have introduced myself as the guest speaker today, shouldn't I? A quick story, and then I want to have us close with a song where you can just open your hands and hear Carl's sweet voice calling for faith and trust. Baker Mayfield, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. What a remarkable athlete, is he not? I mean, he flicks his wrist and a ball goes out like a frozen rope. The guy's got it. He's got it, whatever it is, charisma, leadership, ability. He brings hope to a community that's suffered. He wears orange, and I'm grateful. I just am. But this has been a little bit of a struggle this year, hasn't it? Did you know he holds the ball 3.35 seconds, which is longer than any starting quarterback in the NFL? Did you know he's been sacked third most on the list of 46 people who've been sacked in the NFL? And did you know he's been knocked down more times than any quarterback this year than any other quarterback who's playing the game? I mean, far be it from Freddie Kitchens or Baker Mayfield to take advice from a dunderheaded United Methodist pastor in a suburb of Cleveland. But if I could say one word to this brother, you know what I would tell him? Get rid of the ball. Right? How about a little slant pattern? How about pitch the thing over here? How about do this? Because I don't know if he studied physics, but there are some humongous humans chasing him around. I mean, these are not so much human beings as they are real estate properties. with feet that move faster than he does. I think every time I watch him, Baker, get rid of the ball. There. There. Now they'll be in the Super Bowl if he could just listen to Dave Scavuzzo. And then I think, while I'm armchairing, maybe I should armchair from this balcony. What if Gideon were watching Dave? Or you? I think what he would say is, you're carrying too much. You're holding too much. You're doing too much on your own. You're trying to earn your way, fix your way, secure your way, manipulate your way, do your way, pray your way. Why don't you just let go of the ball? Why don't you just turn it all over to Christ? Your failure, your sin, your misery, your fear, and even your trophies and your goodness, just lay it all down. Get rid of it, I think he would say, and brand new life will come. This morning we encourage you to open your hands, close your eyes, and lay it all down.
At the feet of Jesus. Carry on, but your heart is tired. Feared the worst and felt the fire. Lay it all down, lay it all down. Filled with all those anxious thoughts, and your doubts became your God. Lay it all down, lay it all down at the feet of Jesus. At the feet of Jesus. Lay it all down, lay it all down, lay it all down, lay it all down. Lay it all down, lay it all down, lay it all down, lay it all down. Lay it all down, lay it all down, lay it all down, lay it all down. At the feet of Jesus. At the feet of Jesus. When we've given up on better days, there are memories we can't erase. Lay it all down. Lay it all down. When we've come to fear what we can't explain, and there's nothing here that can ease the pain, lay it all down, lay it all down at the feet of Jesus. At the feet of Jesus.